WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Some Chicago-area families are reeling in the wake of President Trump's executive order barring federal funds for gender-affirming care. That's because, in response, Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago is pausing these surgeries for trans people younger than 19, and it's not scheduling new appointments. The hospital says this is to protect other forms of gender care, but it still leaves many teens in limbo after having their surgeries canceled. Kristen Schorsch, WBEZ's public health and Cook County reporter, has been in touch with families, and she joined us to discuss, along with the parent of a trans teen who receives hormone therapy at Lurie, Michelle Vallée. We began with an explanation of what exactly gender-affirming care and other gender care includes. Here's Kristen.
Yeah, it could be a range of things. It could be something just acknowledging someone's preferred name and pronoun to medical care. So that can involve talking with a social worker or a therapist about how you're feeling about your body, any distress that you're having about your gender. It could be medical treatment like puberty blockers to stop, you know, to stop the changes going on in your body, hormone therapy, and surgery. Although I will point out that surgery is rare, but it's typically a very involved process. It's a very slow and long process. It's not something that just happens overnight. Mm-hmm. Lots of families explained to me, and Michelle will probably also chime in about that, how it is very involved.
So what's this executive order then, and why are some families so concerned with it?
Right, so the executive order came out very soon after the inauguration, and it essentially says, there's lots of different bullet points, but the big one for the hospitals is money. It's all about funding. So a hospital like Lurie Children's, where more than half of the kids are on Medicaid, which is health insurance for people who are low income, it's public insurance, right, that potentially they could be stripped of Medicaid funding, which was huge, right? That's like a big way that they make money. Mm-hmm. There is also something in the executive order about how the federal government could investigate entities that deceive the public about the long-term effects of gender-affirming care. However that is defined, right? It doesn't exactly say that. So there's a lot at stake for hospitals. We saw hospitals across the country stop providing various forms of gender-affirming care right after that executive order. Some have actually resumed care, but Lurie Children's has stopped surgeries. I do want to be clear, they are providing other gender-affirming care, including hormone therapy, puberty blockers, and behavioral health care.
So they haven't stopped those?
They have not stopped those.
Not yet.
Only surgeries.
Yeah. You talked with a teen whose upcoming surgery was canceled. So this teen was affected by what you just described. Now, he told you that it felt a little like he was being told he didn't deserve this. Tell us more.
Yeah, so he had been on a journey for about 4 years with his medical care. He was literally, he and his family were waiting for the call to schedule that surgery. So, you know, he'd been through all the evaluations, everything like that. And then they had read and on social media, his mom had saw on social media that Lurie was pausing these surgeries. So they were in the midst of scheduling, right? Mm-hmm. And so he had mentioned, though, how at his appointments with his doctors at Lurie, they typically said, we will do everything we legally can to keep your care going, to protect you. Mm-hmm. And so he felt very hurt and confused when all of a sudden his option of surgery was then off the table.
Well, let's hear from him. This is what he said he heard from his doctors prior to that cancellation.
All of their responses were, we will fight as hard as we can legally. We will try to push it back as much as we can to, you know, give you the care that you need. And then they go ahead and cancel it themselves. Like, they weren't forced to do that.
Michelle, I want to bring you into the conversation. Hearing that from that teen boy, what do you think of?
I think of all the parents I'm in community with of trans children and the range of emotions they feel, from anger to worry to panic to sadness. Look, the Achilles heel of capitalism, right, is money is always going to win over people. But I think when you're judging strong democracies, the measure is by how well they take care of the most vulnerable. And I think we are failing these children in large ways that could be remedied by, in this environment, saying, no, I'm not going to do that.
Your son, Ben, has already been through much of this process. Are you concerned, though, that hormone therapy is on the line here?
Of course I am.
And that would affect Ben? Tell us more.
It would affect Ben. Ben has been gender nonconforming his whole life, right? So he never fit the box that everybody who thinks of assigned females at birth should socially fit. And when he approached puberty, right, when his body started going through some of those beginning stages, it just became abundantly clear that this wasn't right for him. So we did a lot of research together. I will be very frank for those of for those listeners who are wondering, well, what does this care me? My son was the first trans person I met. So we researched together and we made an appointment at Lurie. And when I say this care happens slowly, I mean it's agonizingly slow. Mm-hmm. From the moment that Ben thought, hey, maybe we should pause, you know, give me some time to think, to first getting puberty blockers was the better part of a year.
Mm, okay.
And it's teams of doctors. It's not you go in and you see some endocrinologist or your primary care physician and all of a sudden you're on hormones and puberty blockers. It's social workers. It's mental health care.
I'm glad you're making this point because I think people do think that it's, you know, the child goes in and says, this is what I want, and it's presto, change-o, you're done.
I would argue trans children are some of the most scrutinized patients in American healthcare today. Mm. It's months and years. And when you're talking about the children who are waiting for surgery, right, this is 4 years in to care that children have received. My son was 16 when he had his surgery. He was 5+ years into gender-affirming care. These children are not making these decisions without careful thought alongside their families, alongside their physicians. Trans kids are forced because they don't fit society's notion of who they should be to be very introspective of themselves. Mm. I would argue that trans children know themselves better than a cis child any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
So, Kristen, tell us more about what Lurie Children's Hospital has been saying to you. Just any further explanation as to why they took this step? Well, is it just we think we have to because Trump said so?
I mean, their big explanation is that they are pausing surgeries so they can save the majority of the other gender care services they provide, the puberty blockers, the hormone therapy, the behavioral health care. So they decided to take this piece of it, right, and kind of put it on pause. Mm-hmm. And I realize, I mean, we're listening to Michelle here, these other families I talked to, that's not appealing to them, right? They're really angry. They're really frustrated. They have spent years going through this process, and they feel betrayed. I heard that word many times. They feel betrayed. Mm-hmm. But I think for Lurie and other hospitals that did this, they're looking at the money and the resources. They're looking at trying to stay open so that they can continue to provide the rest of their care.
Michelle, you talked about just that public misunderstanding, of course, about the gender-affirming care process. Now explain just some of the differences that it's made in Ben's life.
Sure. I think when people meet trans kids, that's who they are, right? That's who they see. My child, the least interesting thing about my child is that he's transgender. He has friends at school he hangs out with. He is interested in political science and environmental science. He's looking to attend the University of Vermont. They are full, whole human beings that need medical care mm-hmm. to feel full, whole, healthy, and happy. And it's necessary in life-saving care, but it's the least part of them.
Yeah.
They are like every other child out there, with the exception that they're transgender. So I would really encourage people to look at their own children and know that trans children are exactly like your own kid or the kids you know, with one small minor detail in that they're transgender.
Kristen, you spoke with a pediatric critical care physician in South Carolina where gender-affirming care is banned, right? It's one of 26 or so states that have put some kind of limit on this. But here's Dr. Elizabeth Mack.
When I see children who can't access care for a variety of reasons, they're not in an affirming space, they haven't found a safe adult, they, because of their state laws, whatever the case may be, and I see them and they come in either attempting or dying by suicide. It's just one of those things that leaves a mark that I can't unsee.
What was it like hearing that impact, Kristen?
It was really hard. I talked to Dr. Mack for quite a while about the children who walk in her doors, right? Because she's like trying to explain why I'm talking to you, a pediatric ICU doc, not someone who provides direct transgender care.
Right.
But it's because her state bans gender-affirming care. And so when she asked these kids who survive or their families why they're there, it's because they weren't able to access care. And she goes and speaks before the state legislature in South Carolina advocating for this type of care. And I think her conversation just also highlights what you said at the top there is 26 states in this country do limit access in some way. And so just more broadly speaking, access is really hard. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Mack is essentially speaking to what she's witnessing.
Yeah, that's more than half, right? It's more than half the states in the country. And so we've got groups like Equality Illinois pushing back on Lurie's decision and also looking into whether this violates the civil rights of trans Illinoisans. You asked Governor Pritzker, Kristen, about this at a news conference last week. I want to play a little bit of what he said.
This is not the hospitals at fault. Believe me, I know the people at Lurie Children's Hospital. I know the people who run most of these hospitals. And I can tell you, they want to do the right thing for their patients.
What do you think about the governor's stance, Michelle? He says it's not the hospital to blame here.
I want to be careful with my words, right? Because I want to be sure I'm speaking clearly in that every parent of a trans kid has compassion for Lurie's situation and position, every one I've talked to. I think the problem that most have is that hospitals everywhere took steps when other vulnerable demographics were targeted, right? When we were talking about abortion care bans, and hospitals stepped up to the plate and assured patients that that access would remain. And I think what every parent of a trans kid right now is asking is, where is that energy for trans kids? Mm.
So what are you keeping your eye on moving forward? Let's hear from both of you before we go. Kristen?
Yeah, well, I would love to have a more direct answer about if hospitals are violating the Illinois Human Rights Act. It's if you're not allowed to discriminate against people based on their gender identity. And so I'm looking at that. I'm going to see if Lurie Children's and other hospitals resume services, Northwestern Medicine. Also, families were telling me that Lurie referred surgical appointments to them, and then mm-hmm. those appointments were canceled. And I want to keep an eye on if any other services also go away, such as puberty blockers, hormone therapy. I think there's a lot at stake for the hospitals, but there's a lot at stake for the families.
And what's top of mind for you and Ben, Michelle?
I think what we're keeping our eye on is this just the first domino, right? Is HRT next? Are other services that Ben accesses at Lurie going to be paused or eliminated? And we're making our decisions accordingly on, you know, access to medication mm-hmm. and what we can do to make sure he has enough medicine if that does go into effect. And we need to have alternative ways to get care.
And you were talking about hormone replacement therapy.
Yes.
Yes. We'll leave it there. That is Michelle Vallée, who's a parent of a trans teen, and WBEZ's health and Cook County reporter, Kristen Shores. Thank you so much, Michelle, for sharing your story.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great reporting, Kristen.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. To stay connected to the local news, make sure to subscribe to Reset wherever you listen. You can also find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.